You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Deborah Eckerling, author of Your Goal Guide and creator of the Deb Method for Goal Setting Simplified. You can't reach your goals on your own. You need your people. So each week I bring together some of my people to dive into the topic. And I'm glad that you've been persuaded to join us. See what I did there? Because today we're talking about the art of persuasion. Okay, it was a little lame, but thank you for rolling with it. This is Goal Chat Live, and if you're joining us live, we thank you. You can also catch the replay and or listen to this as the Goal Chat podcast on the Marketing Podcast Network, where we release new episodes every Thursday. And again, persuasion. I know that was like absolutely no transition, but I'm okay with that. And we have such a great, great panel for this one. We have Beth Granger, who I've known for like ages. We met through Vivica Von Rosen, like I think even pre-pandemic. It was one of those, we're in each other's world. We need to actually know each other. So really happy to have you back, because I know you're all about the conversation. So that's why we needed to have you on here. We also have Carly Myers, who I met via GEM networking. So in theory, I met you through our friend Robbie Samuels. And it's just such a fun, enthusiastic community. I know you came to one of my meet and greets, and I was like, okay, Stressless Co., persuasion. Yes, this is a fit for this conversation. So really happy to have you here. And then we've got Jonathan Pritchard, who we met through Jeff Klein, who I think some of you also know. So the way that we live in the speaking and social media universe, I love when all these paths collide. I know we were introduced because you do trade show strategy and I do goal strategy for events. So, and I love, well, first of all, I love bringing people together who don't know each other until now. Because unless it's on purpose, that's kind of the means of the show. But also persuasion, it's important. And I feel like that's like an understatement, but we're going to dive into that in a minute. I would love for you all to introduce yourselves a little bit better and share why you are here and why this topic is so meaningful to you. So Beth, let's start with you. Welcome.
Sure. So Beth Granger, I'm a trainer, consultant, and speaker on the topic of unleashing the power of LinkedIn, but I am also something called an Exactly What to Say certified guide. And that's all about identifying and elevating life's critical conversations. And those conversations might be conversations to persuade somebody to do things or help them find the decision for themselves whether to do something.
Well, all good things can come from conversation, and nothing can come when you are not having them. So there you go. Well, wonderful to have you here. And Carly, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I own the Stress Less Company. I've been spending the last 7+ years now helping people reduce their stress and enhance their relationships using methodologies like the Stress Less Method and something called Safe Conversations.
And so where does, and we'll go into this more, I'm sure, where does stress and persuasion come together? Where do those two little areas meet?
Well, persuasion kind of insinuates that someone has a different perspective than you and you're trying to get them onto your side of the fence. Well, the number one reason that people fight is actually objection to difference, exactly the reason why we're trying to persuade someone. So quite a bit of stress. And actually, relationships are in the top 5 stressors for Americans, according to a recent study put together by the American Psychological Association. So lots of connection between stress and persuasion. That is for sure.
Awesome. Well, glad you are here for sure. And Jonathan, welcome.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here. So let's see. I am the founder of Zavant Enterprises, which is a company with a suite of services helping companies connect with their audience, whether it's at a trade show or a conference or sales launch, any of that kind of thing. And it comes from my basically 15 years traveling the world as a professional mind reader. So basically, I would get people up on stage in front of a room full of 1,000 people and help them have a good time by apparently being able to read their minds. So the techniques and principles I'm using on stage, I realized, oh, could help out in the business world. And then that's when I moved into business consulting in addition to doing the performing stuff.
Okay, so I got stuck on the word apparently.
Yes.
So explain, apparently read minds.
It looks like I can read minds, predict the future, and do all those kinds of supernatural extrasensory perception things. But really, it's all communication skills, applied psychology, showmanship, and moxie done really well. So I don't claim to have any kind of supernatural skill that nobody's born with except me. I'm not special. I've just spent a lifetime learning how to communicate with people.
Okay. Well, first of all, we're all special. And second of all, that's so cool.
Well, thank you.
And I think all of these skills come together, which is why I'm really excited to dive into this conversation. So let's start with a softball that can have like how many gazillion answers, but what is persuasion, Jonathan?
Let's see. As quickly as I can, I think of it as a matrix, a four quadrant matrix. Are you trying to change behavior or beliefs for my benefit or everybody's benefit? So trying to change behavior to my benefit is coercion. Give me your money. And then trying to change your beliefs to my benefit is manipulation, usually by withholding facts and information that you would need to make a fully informed decision. On the other side, if I'm trying to benefit everybody in this dynamic and I'm trying to change your behavior, that is influence. I'm trying to influence you to go to this restaurant because I know you'll love it. If I'm trying to change your beliefs to the betterment of everybody, then that is persuasion. So to me, it's helping change somebody's belief to their improvement and everybody else involved in the relationship.
So the betterhood, mostly, right?
Right, right. To me, that's the only way that makes sense. Because most of the time when somebody, you say persuasion, and they're like, ew, persuasion's icky. It's because they're confused about what it is, and they usually think they're talking about manipulation, whereas coercion is very obviously bad. Like, you're robbing somebody. I'm going to use a knife to persuade you to give me your money. Like, no, that's coercion. So that's why, to me, the distinction is helping somebody change their beliefs to improve their life or everybody's life, which is in sales. If I'm really the best person to solve your problem, I have to persuade you into believing that I'm the best person for the job, because it's who you believe will do the best job that you hire, not the person who's actually best at it. So if you are the best, you better be good at persuading people to understand you're the best. Otherwise, you're going to be real frustrated when the guy who's better at persuasion than you are, but nowhere near as good at your skill as you are, gets the job.
I so get why you do what you do, and you do it so well. So thank you for that persuasive argument about persuasion. Beth, do you have something different or to add to this?
Well, I love that matrix, and I think I need you to write it down, or I'll have to rewatch this to write it down for myself. I really do like that, because persuasion does get it. When you hear it, you think it's a negative thing. And to me, it can be changing somebody's perspective or helping them look at a situation in a different way. So persuading them to come to a different conclusion than they might have started with.
And it's all about end result, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but that's the first thing most people think when they hear the word.
That's true. What do you think, Carly?
I agree. The Matrix was brilliant. You had me, you know, leaning on my chin here, leaning forward. You know, when I think of the word persuasion, I think of I'm in Camp A, you're in Camp B. Come on over to Camp A. Whatever I can do to get you to come over to Camp A. And I would argue that maybe it's important for us to talk about today coercion and the other parts of that matrix, because when folks are talking about the art of persuasion, they are talking about those other things. And so what can we do to create healthier communication, safer conversations the whole way around?
Yeah, I feel like we're taking back the word, saying that persuasion is good, even though so many people ascribe negative connotations. Why? Is it that they've just been duped or what? What is with all the negatives around persuasion? Carly?
You know, I think at the end of the day, each and every one of us have a deep desire to feel seen and understood. And oftentimes we as humans, we mean well. And we want, we mean well, and so we offer advice and we offer feedback and we offer, right, all of these things. We think we're trying to help the other person, but at the end of the day, they don't actually need that feedback. They don't need that advice. They don't need the coercion or influence even. They just need to be seen and to be heard. And so persuasion can get a bad rep. Even genuine persuasion can have a bad rep, land poorly, because maybe that person just wants to feel seen and understood.
That's a really good point. Jonathan, what do you think?
In 1906, Houdini wrote a book called The Right Way to Do Wrong, and he explained exactly how to scam people, how to run cheats, cons, swindles. And the justification was, if you know how to perform all these horrific things, you'll be able to recognize it earlier and then be able to protect yourself from it. I think a lot of people have a bad reputation, or persuasion does, because they're not good at it and they can't recognize when somebody's using it for their own purposes. And the very mistaken belief that I tell the truth, therefore I don't need to be persuasive. Right? The truth and persuasion, they're related, but cousins at best. They're in the same family tree. I would hope that you're using persuasion to help communicate the truth, but telling the truth alone doesn't even get you in the same ballpark as persuasion. So I think that's what everybody thinks. If I just tell the truth, I shouldn't need persuasion. And then that's why they're not good at communicating.
I'm seeing this family tree. I think that's the next graphic you need to create after The Matrix, which if you haven't already done so. Beth, do you want to add to this?
It's so interesting, the different ways to say the same thing, but it's really, to me, what you were saying about the truth. No, I mean, that doesn't mean somebody has the belief in that. Somebody can say, I don't believe you, right? So even if you're saying something, that's the truth. Plus, it might not be whatever that thing is, whatever that truth is, might not be the right, still might not be the right answer or the right path or the right whatever for that person. So I think working together to come up with a conclusion, if, for instance, in a sales conversation, which is the kind that I'm most used to, right? I don't want to sell somebody something that isn't right for them. So I want to persuade them to, I want to get, influence them, perhaps is a better word, to get them to, so I can understand what their history is, why they're speaking with me, what they've tried before, all those kinds of things. And then it's really persuading them to make a decision, not that the decision is me, but to make a decision.
So I'm like jumping the line in terms of my questions, because I think this is a common theme as well, is people, most people just aren't that good at persuasion. And even if they are good, they can always be better. So how can people get better at persuasion? Beth?
I think by having stronger conversations, and that starts with curiosity. So the more questions they ask, the better they get to know somebody. That's the first place to start.
And the second place?
Just continuing to do it, right? Practicing, having those conversations over and over and over, and really listening to the person, not reading from a script, for instance, and just not waiting for the answer and reading that next question on your list.
Oh my goodness. How many people have been on the call with the telemarketer who's just reading, right? And you're like, come on, ditch the script. I am a person. Stop treating me like I am not one, right? Yeah.
100%. 100%.
And what do you think, Jonathan? What can people do to get better at conversations?
I think of it a lot like painting. And if you asked somebody, how would I get better at painting dragons, which don't actually exist, you would first have to study reality and to be able to paint reality perfectly before you could paint the perfect thing that doesn't really exist. So in my book, to get better at persuasion, learn how to do a magic trick perfectly, because you'll understand timing, tone of voice, the words you use, your body language, everything comes together to communicate. And only when you can communicate that lie perfectly will you understand how difficult it is to communicate the truth and have somebody believe in it. So weirdly, learn how to lie perfectly if you want to be a better persuader in an ethical way.
I can't decide if that's really creepy or really strategic.
It's scary good is what it is. And my mentor, James Randi, his documentary is on Netflix, and it's called An Honest Liar. And he told me, he goes, Jonathan, we're honest liars. We stand on stage, we tell people we're going to lie to them, and then we do. And that's the only reason it's honest. What really got him going is seeing somebody use the principles of magic to fraud people and to lie, cheat, and steal. So that was kind of his mission in life, is to help people see when they're being lied to or manipulated by way of these principles that make magic work.
Okay, so to be better at persuasion, you need to learn how to make convincing arguments against things that do exist, so you can do it with things that don't exist. And then practice magic so you become good at lying, and then use those principles for telling the truth.
Yes, because you don't know how hard it is to tell the truth until you try to tell a lie that people would believe in, and then you try it, and then you realize just how bad you are at it. But getting to perform the trick, it starts at a, I saw what you did, and then you're very discouraged. But then your friends will be like, oh, that's an interesting puzzle. I wonder how you did that. Then without changing much, it goes into miracle territory where people go, how did you know that? No, seriously, were you born with the gift? How did you do that? That's when you've understood all the elements that go into persuasion and communication, and then you can consciously put those in service of your message in an honest, ethical way.
So we could say that persuasion is magic.
I like to think so.
That's still pretty cool. Okay, Carly's having fun down there. What is your take about getting better at persuasion?
All right. I knew that I was going to be controversial on this panel. I already knew it going in. I actually think if I were to answer this question directly, I would say to get better at persuasion, you simply have to be a great role model. That for perhaps you don't actually have to persuade at all, that is not the best route to go. because at the end of the day, what we're doing is then we're stepping on someone else's sense of selfhood, their identity, their who they really are. And so that is, I think, why persuasion, even with the best intentions, can feel so icky, because at the core of it, we could be saying what you believe is incorrect. Even if, you know, maybe there is some reality in which everyone agrees except for that person, that it's incorrect. I would say to get better at persuasion, if you want someone to go to the where the grass is greener, then role model what the grass is greener really looks like. Take a step back from trying to change that person's mind and just live your life from that perspective.
Okay, so we have, I love this. So by being, and this kind of calls back to something Jonathan said at the onset, it would be great if the best person for the job always got the job. But because of perception, you need to not only be the best person for the job, which is what you're saying, Carly, is you need to find ways to show that you are indeed that best person. Did I get it?
I think to be the best role model for the job, like, for instance, let's say I'm all about stress management. Okay, well then how am I, and that is what I'm all about, right? So how do I display that? Well, I show up calm, I show up collected, I show up perhaps with a specific kind of positive energy of any of the range. And that says, that can be persuasive. Like, yeah, that's who she is. Okay, cool. Okay, then what's the next level in terms of sales, in terms of business? Perhaps it's not about persuasion again, but perhaps it's about visibility. It's about being seen amongst the crowd and being visible amongst the crowd. Although I do see where we're going with this in terms of business and sales. But perhaps there's a way to go about it that involves much more ease and authenticity in our relationships.
Okay, so you want to be who you are, like, all the time. I say this frequently. Find someone who loves goals as much as I do. I dare you. Be visible, show up, and be authentic. And wouldn't it be great, and I see the response I'm going to get from Jonathan, so I'm going to predict. Wouldn't it be great as if that was all that it took? Is that all that it takes, Jonathan? He's shaking. If you're listening, he is shaking his head, and Beth and Carly are laughing.
No, because when you're on stage in front of 1,000 people, you want your message to be in alignment with who you are as a person. It can destroy yourself if you have a stage persona that's completely at odds with how you want to live your life. And then now there's this entity that you feed with your time and energy that is completely opposite of who you are. And now you're trapped in that perception as the character when you're out and about, and then people think you're the character. That's horrific. So I like alignment with your highest principles more than I like authenticity, because when I'm on stage, you don't want the frustrated dad part of me when my toddler is throwing a tantrum. Like, that's authentic. However, it is distracting from the message that I'm trying to communicate on stage. So I try not to have a stage character that's super different. It's me with the parts that help you understand dialed up, and the parts that would distract you dialed down as much as possible. So I'm still me. I'm still in alignment with my mission. I'm not going to advocate for something that I wouldn't advocate for off stage. So in that way, I understand authenticity. To me, that word misses the mark in terms of how difficult it is to communicate at scale when you're trying to talk to a lens. Like, authentically, I'd be freaked out because this thing never blinks and I don't know what to do with my hand, right? So to appear natural in a very unnatural situation, that's a part of communication. So yeah, that's why I like alignment better than authenticity, but I do want to have an honest representation of self in all contexts, and whatever means is expedient for that situation, I want to do that instead of, well, this is just who I am all the time, take me or leave me, and I'm like, I'm gonna leave you. Like that's that's what happens there.
Jonathan, I think we have a business idea there somewhere with something like an eye that blinks on your webcam or something. Oh. There's a business idea there. When I first started using a webcam, I put a picture behind it. So I was looking at a face rather than a, yeah.
Bright, a bright little pinhole light, right?
Yeah. Off topic, I know.
Admittedly disturbed by this idea. Not the picture, just the blinking lens.
Well, you know,
we have to do two.
They've got those privacy things that you could put over your lens for when you're not on camera or when you're, you know, not want to be caught on camera. So why wouldn't you put one of those that's an eyelash, an eyelid with lashes on it? So anyway.
It's like now we're going into computer accessory territory. It's like the car of headlights with the eyelashes. Now we've got them for our computer.
Well, I think, reining us back in, one thing we can all agree on is that you need to start with who you are. And then you can dial it up from there, whether you're using the word authenticity or alignment. They both work. I love both of those words. And the D and the Deb method, it's determine your mission and everything grows from there, because you can't get what you want unless you know what that is, but also who you are and what is your purpose, what makes you unique and what drives you to do what it is that you do to make the world, people's lives, etc., better. So we start there, and then we've got to layer on the alignment / authenticity. So people know that the best person, which is you, is the one that needs to connect with the ideal clients, customers, and get the work. So, great. Sounds so simple. But is it? Is being persuasive as simple as that? Beth?
I think it goes far beyond that, right? It's your confidence in what you're, the way you present yourself, your confidence, whether you actually know what you're talking about. Of course, there are people who don't know what they're talking about who are very persuasive, but I think it takes practice. For instance, how many people do you know, myself included, we started a business because we had a skill or an interest, not because we were salespeople. And sales can be seen as persuading sometimes. It depends how you look at it. But so I think it takes practice. I think it takes time for people to become persuasive. I actually, years ago, looked into this whole idea of comedy as a persuasive element. Now, I don't do comedy or anything like that, but I was looking into it. And making somebody laugh can be a very persuasive technique, because it allows them to hear something without realizing they've heard it in a way. So I think there are lots of different techniques, and people need to experiment with them, try them, see what works for them.
Oh, that's true too. And this is something that comes up a lot in these conversations. This is all meant for motivation and inspiration. Not everything we say is going to work for every single person who's watching, but ideally that there are pieces of it that you can take into who you are and what you do. So you get better at being you, get closer towards reaching your goals and end result, the life that you want. And you mentioned humor, which I love. I am only funny when I am not trying to be funny. So you can imagine how unfunny I am when I am legit trying to use humor. So what are some other things people can do, Carly, for showing up more authentically / in alignmently? I know it's not a word, but I don't care.
Well, I actually do want to go back to something Jonathan shared earlier, which was pretty provocative. I might add, which most of what you've been saying today has been quite provocative, and I think it's supposed to be to go down this art of persuasion thing, which is that you need to learn to lie good so that you can tell the truth good. And it really reminds me of an idea that I've heard related to, you really need to get to know your monsters really well so that you know how to tame your monsters really well. And there's nothing more admirable than someone who's learned to, like, who has a dark side, but knows how to tame it and knows how to do good. I think the story that I've heard related to that is, like, there's nothing, nothing inspiring or courageous about a rabbit, right? A rabbit doesn't have, like, what's it going to do? You know, we're not really scared of it. But what about a lion who has this impulse to jump after its prey, but it doesn't? Wow, right? We're impressed by that. So that, I just wanted to speak to that, Jonathan, because you reminded me of that story. There's something to be said here about knowing the dark side of a situation so that you can tame that dark, perhaps even if we're talking about the art of persuasion, the dark side of yourself, the desire to manipulate, coerce, influence, and even persuade when you're not supposed to, or when it's not appropriate. So this is really an important part of the conversation. But in terms of showing up authentically or in alignment, I think that's, like I said, the best form of persuasion, because you don't have to then persuade. You get to just show. So how do you do that? That's a really challenging thing to do in today's world. It actually boils down to either incredible courage or incredible psychological safety in the communities that you build or that you're part of. And I think unfortunately, most of the communities that we're part of, they don't create psychological safety for so many of us. And that's why we feel we have to go into any of those four quadrants to get our needs met. So I guess then the question becomes, how do we become courageous to be that role model and really be visible and go against the grain? And I think that goes back to some of my key teachings and my work with my clients. All of my clients work something called the Stress Less Method. And it's a 5-step methodology that, shocker, helps you reduce stress. But the first step is manage your energy, which is just a fancy way of saying calm your nervous system. So in order to be courageous, what is it that your nervous system, you got to figure out what is it that your nervous system needs. So is it, I talk about physical sobriety. So, like, okay, is caffeine giving you anxiety? That's like a simple example, right? I also talk about emotional sobriety. Are your emotions coming out sideways? That's another thing. Are your intentions pure? What's going on emotionally? Letting that go. And then all the gurus talk about mindfulness in the present moment, but there's something to be said for that, because when we're in the present moment, courage is so much easier. So, so much easier.
So it starts with breathing and being in your body.
Perhaps. Depends on the person.
Right. Or rather, what being calm means to you.
Yeah. It starts with a sense of safety within yourself, doing whatever you can to give yourself a sense of safety so that you can have the courage in perhaps an appropriately unsafe environment. I'm not saying a fully unsafe environment, but let's say, like, the business world, right? To show up as your authentic self.
I like that. And again, Jonathan is nodding. So what do you think, Jonathan? What does it take to show up better?
One way I've found to be calm in challenging situations is to be more dangerous than the situation you're in. So if you want to talk about accepting your shadow self and doing that shadow work and bringing your monsters in, if you know you're a beast, this problem presents no challenge. Why even care? So that a lot of folks aren't even tapped into their monster self that could be used for good, so that the smallest challenge is overwhelming. And if you developed your ability to handle really difficult situations, what counts as a difficult situation, that bar has to go up and up, and you can still manage it. And you're like, oh, this thing that used to be a huge issue, I don't even think about it anymore. So that, to me, is my favorite way to be calm, is to just know how to handle crazy situations.
May I jump in here?
Yeah.
You're reminding me of a question someone once asked me, which is, what is appropriate trust? They asked me that question. And I was like, what a weird question. Let me think about that for a second. And my answer was that appropriate trust is trusting myself to be able to handle any situation, regardless of how it goes. So that means, so a lot of times when we talk about trust, we talk about what other people are going to do. Do we trust another person? But appropriate trust to me is, can I trust myself to handle whatever's going to come my way? And I think you're kind of speaking to that a little bit, is like, you're saying be more dangerous than the situation you're in, but it's also saying like, acknowledge that you've got whatever it takes to conquer whatever it is. And there's a direct correlation between what we're talking about here and stress. Oftentimes stress comes up because we believe we are incapable of handling whatever it is. So that is, my Google's listening to me. There we go. it's like very fascinated in what we're talking about. Appropriate trust. Yeah. So it's, I've lost my train of thought. Come back to me. Google was listening and got the best.
Well, actually, so a question for you or for anybody. We talk about, I'm in a group called National Speakers Association, and we have different conversations about getting on stage and whatever. And I think, I'm not a doctor, but I think in terms of our body's reaction to things, there's good stress. What we decide is good stress and bad stress, but our body feels it the same way, right? Mm-hmm. So the excitement and energy that is stressful to our bodies is a good thing, but then stress that where it's something we perceive as bad, like our bodies can't tell the difference. So between excitement and something bad.
Well, it's interesting because It shows up physically the same. Like we get the adrenaline, the heart pounding, the armpits sweating, whatever. But the long-term implications of that stress are different based on, I think you were kind of getting to that, in terms of our side effects. So if we're experiencing eustress, which is like euphoric stress, good stress, we don't end up with the long-term side effects that we might get with distress, like cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, reproductive issues. I mean, the list goes on. It's the same kind of physical symptoms, but it doesn't create the lasting harmful side effects, which is really interesting to think about.
It's the magic of meaning.
It is. And the other way that I define stress is that stress equals the thing plus our perception of the thing at the end of the day. An example I like to give is kayaking. Okay, for a long time, I grew up in an area where there were dams, like, I don't know, a million dams on every river. And I would always hear stories of people going over and drowning, or, you know, basically going over and that would be it for them. And so I developed this fear of going kayaking or canoeing on a river without like a company guiding my way, right? And I remember complaining to my dad about a friend who just wanted to throw the kayaks in the river. I'm like, could you believe this friend? They're insane. We're going to die. They're like, this is awful. We need to plan our route. We need to have a company. We need to call the people, you know, whatever. And my dad, so that was my stress response. Ooh, like, we're going to die, right? This is not a good idea. And my dad goes, what are you talking about? You plop your kayak or canoe in the river, you go against the current, against the flow of the river, you will never find yourself at the top of a dam. You will always find yourself at the bottom. You go against the current of the river and you float your way back and you will always be safe. And I was like, what are you talking about? Two totally different perceptions.
So did he persuade you to do that?
I don't know about that, but it was two totally different perceptions. And you can understand two totally different stress levels at the same time. So, I do think about that when I go kayaking.
And in theory, the result being, oh, okay, it does not need to. It goes back to whether you think you can or you think you can't. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's taking the perception, which is going hand in hand with the persuasion. The other thing that you were saying, well, both slash all of you, is the reason why some people freak out when the littlest thing happens to them is because they don't know real stress, real trauma. You see people who are, because everybody's lives all over the internet, freaking out about what one person might consider a small thing, but it's a big thing because they do not have that history behind. They don't know how to deal with it. And that perception is going to influence their reaction. I see you nodding.
It could go both ways. From my perspective, it could go both ways. It could be lack of experience, but it could also be vastness of experience that have folks, you know, tipping over, let's say, the edge of stress much easier. If we've got a nervous system that's on edge, the smallest thing, like an email, send us over the edge. So I just want to clarify that for listeners who maybe feel like, wait, this thing for other people is small. I don't want anyone to feel judged.
And this is another thing that comes up in these conversations all the time, is everybody's journey is different. Mm-hmm. We're all at a different, so that, what is it, comparison analysis, or there's a better word than that, but basically don't. Your life is your life, your experience is your experience. As long as you're doing the best you can, go you. I've completely stuffed my conversation. Bad podcast host. Well,
I can jump in on that because magicians are doing a thing that's amazing no matter where you grew up. They're operating at such a fundamental psychological level that it is pre-cultural. It's not culturally contextual that this would be amazing, that this thing just showed up out of nowhere. So that's why a lot of the psychology that we understand from that research and meta-analysis for multiple studies, they're usually done on college freshmen, which I don't know about you, but when I was a college freshman, I was not a representative of humanity. I would not have called myself the humanity's best, right? So to me, that's why most psychology research, I could take it or leave it. But magicians for past 10, 20,000 years have been using the same stupid tricks in every single society, and it still works because human beings are wired the same way, if you understand it. So yeah, there are some very, very few but universal approaches to human communication that work no matter what culture you grew up in. So that's why when people like, everybody's journey is different, I'm like, is it? I've been in front of millions of people doing the same six stupid tricks, and they work. So in one way, yes. In another way, there's too much common to throw it all out.
Jonathan, can you share, like, when you say the tricks, are what kind of tricks are you talking about? Since this is our first time meeting, I get the benefit of learning more.
Pulling the rabbit out of a hat?
That was back in the age where not a lot of people were eating all that great. And if you were able to pull dinner out of your hat, wouldn't that be amazing? The reason why you think of pulling a rabbit out of a hat as quintessential magic is because that was the archetypal representation of that generation's highest wish, right? Ooh. Or being able to pull money out of thin air. That was popular in the Great Depression. So it's kind of a visual, experiential archetype made real of the most deep wish of people. That's what magic is. I wish I could control the forces of nature to make what I desperately wish were real, real. And that guy on stage seems to have been able to figure out how that works. So the trick that we can get lost in the terminology, but it's basically the methods by which the experience is made real. right? Because you've got the timeline. Communication is very clear. You want it to be very easy to follow and understand. If there's any confusion, there's no communication. So after you see a magic show, you should be able to say, he asked me to pick a card. He told me what it was. Very simple. Somewhere along that line, reality deviates, but you think you're still on this track, but the magician did something that's over here. So at the end, when you think you're here, he reveals you're actually here, and this is the space for amazement. In a business context, when those two tracks deviate, that is the space where you start getting sued, where you start getting bad reviews. So you want to be able to make sure that your spectator, your participant, your lead, your client never deviates from that clear track of here's how we're going to win working together. So it's whatever method is required for making that outcome happen.
See, now I want to like learn magic. I am just beyond fascinated by the turn that, this conversation has taken.
That's the thing. Like, most magicians want to keep these secrets secret.
Right.
And since they're so enamored with the secrets, it's difficult for them to really appreciate how valuable they are outside the world of magic and how it can completely transform somebody's business or life to learn how to be a better communicator. So that's why I'm not all that liked in the magic world, because I like to share these secrets to the muggles on how to make your business better. Like, oh no, please throw me out of that group if you think that's a bad idea. So that's why I don't feel so bad about talking about how this stuff can help people.
And then it also goes back to, you know, what is your mission? What is it that you do? And then what makes you unique? We all have our thing that makes us unique, which makes us a player in this, I don't want to say game called life, because when I think about the actual game life, they're spinning a little wheel, and that's what determines your life. Here, we are intentionally taking steps to get where we want to go. Yes, there's some chance involved, but when we start with that purpose, with that alignment, with that authenticity, and to be as big a version of ourselves as we can be, that is the way that we stand out and draw the right clients, customers, people to us. Okay, it's going to take me a while to unpack all the goodness from this conversation. You can go to thedebmethod.com/blog to get the recaps and the links to this and my previous episodes. Before we wrap, though, let's leave our audience with a goal. So what goal do you want to gift our listeners/viewers? What is one thing that they could do today, tomorrow, tonight, do you get better at being persuasive? Beth, what is your goal to gift?
My goal to gift is to be more curious and ask more questions. Be like that 4-year-old kid who always asks why.
And who are you asking these questions to?
Whoever it is that you want to both persuade or have a stronger relationship with. Because you'll get to know them, you'll uncover things about them, and the relationship will develop.
I like that. Thank you. And Carly?
You know, I think after having this conversation that the goal for everyone should be calm your nervous system, create a grounded space, get in touch with yourself however you can. And I promised a free gift pre-show, so I'll let you share that link, Deborah, in the show notes for folks. But manage your energy, and I've got a free gift on why that's so important, if it isn't already clear.
Well, I think it probably is. Because when you are calm, you could do great things. When you are coming at everything from a space where you are not calm, you know, nothing is guaranteed. It is so easy to go off. It's like something as simple as parallel parking. If you're having a good day, parallel parking is so easy. But if you're stressed, it's like the hardest thing in the world. Am I right? Okay, you're on the East Coast, but do you actually drive, Beth?
Oh, yeah. I'm not in the city.
Oh,
there are
okay.
people in the city that don't drive, but yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
so parking is easy. It's just math.
But when you're stressed, it's hard to do math.
Absolutely. When you're stressed, it's hard to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I put in the chat on the Facebook, and it, again, will be in the show notes as well. So thank you for that, Carly. And Jonathan, what goal are you gifting?
I'm going to quadruple down on learn a simple magic trick, something that is stupid, easy to do, but is disproportionately amazing to how much effort it takes. And you'll still be impressed at how difficult it is to pull it off right. So that's what I do. And you sign up for my newsletter. First thing I'll do is teach you a really simple card trick that I've personally been performing for over 30 years. And it's just stupid good. It's real good. And it's simple to do, which helps get it out of the way so that you can focus on connecting with the person you're performing it for. And you go, oh, that's what communication is. Oh, I get it. So that's it.
One of my mantras is that all wins count. So I love that. Well, I love the simplicity of all these questions, all these goals, you know, as questions, calm down, learn a simple trick and start with that baseline so you can flourish. Ooh, such a fun conversation. Jonathan, where can people learn more about you and reading minds?
Well, the easiest place to go is icanreadminds.com. That's kind of like my link tree where you can find the different companies that I own, the sign up for the newsletter, books I've written, find me on LinkedIn, social media. That's my hub to all the different things I've got going because I help anywhere there's a person involved, which is everywhere. So I've found all sorts of different ways to apply this psychology to life and business. So that's it.
Awesome. And Carly, where can people learn more about you?
All right. Well, you can find me at stresslessco.com. Keep it simple. You can find me there and on social media at thestresslessco.
And Beth.
Of course, BethGranger.com and on LinkedIn, my favorite platform.
And as I said before, you can go to thedevmethod.com/blog to get the recap for this and the previous conversations. You can follow me. I am at thedevmethod everywhere. And you can join us live 4 p.m. Pacific every Monday and LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. And then on Thursdays, again, episodes of Goal Chat are live, which is basically this, but the audio version, at your favorite podcast platform. And Goal Chat is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. And if you need a little bit of a nudge in the right direction of your goals, you can grab a copy of your goal guide at your favorite place to buy books. So you've all been so persuasive in your take on the topic of persuasion. What final thought would you like to leave people with today, Beth?
Oh, I know this is wacky, but I want to learn a magic trick. So learn that magic trick. That's my final thought.
I'm with you. And if you are part of my Write On online community, and you've made a goal to learn a magic trick, please put that there or in the comments of anywhere, in the comments of LinkedIn or Facebook or YouTube, you know, claim that you're going to learn a magic trick, but then circle back and let us know how it goes. I love that your final thought was someone else's goal. It's awesome. And Carly, what is your final thought?
Honestly, my final thought based on our conversation is just how cool it is to be in a room full of people with a variety of different perspectives, persuading, like having conversations, potentially persuading each other on their perspective on persuasion. It's a little bit like Inception. So final thoughts are really grateful and thoroughly intrigued by all the perspectives in the room.
Well, that is sort of one of my superpowers, is bringing together. And like I said, every now and then I do have people who know each other, but more often than not, it's just fun for me to bring you all together so you can learn from one another. And nothing brings me more joy than when I see people who've been on the show together connect and comment and tag in the feed. So thank you for being part of this great conversation, because we never know, especially when we bring such different people together, where the conversation will go. Jonathan, final thought.
I want to leave with a cliffhanger, teasing a whole nother conversation, because there's a 7-step persuasion formula that if you follow it, you change minds. If you don't, you will never be persuasive. So if you want to know what that is, good luck. And we'll cover it next time.
Okay, your host might have something to say about the cliffhanger, but what you're saying is there are 7 steps to being more persuasive.
Yeah.
I feel like it should be one of the, you know, those jumble puzzles where we're coming up with all these great visual graphics for you, Jonathan. I hope you're writing them down. I'm seeing a word search with all seven of the principles in there.
Exist.
Does that exist?
Yeah, I think almost entirely in pictures. So that's why most of the time I communicate in picture metaphors and that kind of thing. Yeah. But really, there's a 7-step persuasion formula that builds into sales processes, marketing, branding, the whole 9 yards.
Okay. Can you give us the first one?
Yes. Here are the symptoms you're experiencing in the words you use to describe them, right? Stated plainly, it's here's what you think the problem is. Because when people come to you as a consultant and they go, here's my problem, they're actually describing symptoms of the cause, but they won't listen to you until they know you've heard everything that they've said. So you have to explain the problem the way that they explained it to you. So you go, so here's your situation. Here's your problem. But in your head, you're going, here's what they think the problem is. Because the symptoms they're experiencing are not the cause, but it's the only way they know how to communicate their challenge.
And then it goes back to communication, being able to see, being able to talk, being able to not just hear, but listen. If we want to tie a really...
Right. Mentalism is so special because it tells you about you. I don't tell you anything new. I don't add anything to the conversation. My only special superpower is telling you what you already know. But that is such a miracle that you'll remember it for the rest of your life.
I am... digesting every bit. And again, I love the different perspectives of it. It's listen. If you had only one superpower to be persuasive, it would be listening. And it's part of the communication, which you can only do if you are centered and feeling stress free. So you did it. You all work hand in hand. Thank you so much, Beth Granger, Carly Myers, and Jonathan Pritchard for joining me. Thank you for tuning in, whether you're watching Goal Chat Live or the replay or listening to the Goal Chat podcast. Thank you for choosing yourself and your goals. You can be more persuasive. You've got the tools. So go on out there and go for it, because we know you can do it.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.